Coming Up Next Time podcast is brought to you in part by Built to Ride. Head over to builttoride.ca and pick up some coffee or apparel. Use the exclusive listener code COMEUP when you check out for an additional 20% off your order. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Barry Moore. I would just like to take a moment to thank the Second Gear Club for putting on such a wonderful event in Yaha Tinda, the Wild Horse Hare Scramble. It was an amazing event with a great turnout, so thank you to Jeff and everybody for putting on such a wonderful event. With summer here, it's become a little bit more difficult for me to sit down with guests and record episodes and get out to race and ride. So I'm going to take a couple of weeks off here and maybe come back mid-August or start of September. I have some great things in the pipeline. I just need the time to get it done. So I want to thank all of you for coming along on this adventure so far. And don't worry, I'm not going anywhere. This is something that I've found that I really enjoy doing. And yeah, looking forward to more. So stay in touch over social media to see what's coming. My next guest is a Western Canadian rider, probably the top rider in North America. He's trained by both Alberta and BC as a local boy, because he spends his time split between Invermere and Calgary. I feel really fortunate that he and I caught up and we got to get this recording to happen. Coming up next, this is Tristan Hart.
So how are you doing? Like, you just came off the podium, didn't you?
Yeah, I just got the win at Michigan, so back home now, barely got to the border, but at my parents' place quarantining, and that's pretty much it, I guess.
That's fair. It was a bit of an ordeal at the border. We don't have to go into details, I guess.
It's a different story every time I go there, I swear.
Are you always coming in through the same port of call, like always through Calgary, or...?
I drive across the border, so Cranbrook or Roseville are the two borders I drive through.
Oh, okay, fair. Then, yeah, that changes stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, well. I've been going through, I guess, your career, and 2020 was a pretty amazing year, and you came out just short of being the overall winner.
Yeah, 2020 was a bit of a breakthrough year for me, I'd say. I was a podium guy in most extreme enduros and enduro crosses for like 2017, 18, and 19. But in 2020, I started winning, which is what the factories want. They don't care too much about second and third. They want wins. So last year, it all came together for me, and that kind of projected me onto the factory KTM team, which is where I'm at now.
That's got to be pretty awesome. It's a really big team.
Yeah, KTM doesn't mess around. They don't take shortcuts. They do everything to a T, and I think it's the best team. So that's why I decided to go there, and I'm pretty happy with it so far.
Yeah, no doubt. And 2021, a year that is sort of like hard for everybody. You've been rocking it. You have I don't want to swear too much, but you have a shit ton of podiums and a lot of victories this year.
Yeah, for 2021 so far, me and Cody each have 3 wins, so I think we're tied right now. And then I think we both have the other 3 are second place. So me and him have been going back and forth, which is kind of fun, kind of not fun. It's fun to win. Getting second to the same guy every time kind of gets old. So, yeah, you just got to live with that.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, you don't start out on the starting line to come in second. I imagine guys at your level want to win. I spoke to him a little while ago, and he made like a wisecrack about the Canadian kid giving him a hard time. I think it's pretty awesome. Like, you definitely forced him to up his game. You and Colton pushing hard.
Yeah, last year when I beat him at Battle of the Goats and TKO back to back. And then the next race, I think, was in Texas, and he waxed me. Like, he beat me by 8 minutes or something. So I don't know. I think I pissed him off or something, because ever since then, he's been on another level. So I've had to up my game, too, because I realized that he upped his game. So, it's good to see that I kind of woke him up, because I think he's had it, like, I don't want to say easy, but he's had it pretty easy, I would say, in North America. Like, he's pretty much won every race he's entered in the last, like, up until 2020. I don't think he's lost many races in North America. And he's gone over to Europe, and he's got podiums at the biggest races over there. So he's one of the best overall riders for Endurocross and extreme enduro in the world. So to be racing with him now for wins is pretty crazy to think about. I don't really think about it that much, but I just think about getting beat by him.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that's a crazy thing to think about. You don't focus as much on the wins as much as you do the losses.
Yeah, they definitely get me fired up when he beats me. I go home so mad. I don't talk to people or something for a week. Maybe I'll just do my thing.
Oh, really? That's crazy. Like, yeah. I mean, I can understand. Right now I'm reading Jarvis's memoir, and that's what he constantly beats himself up on all the losses, like pretty brutally. Sometimes his mentors and stuff would have pulled him aside and been like, "Hey, you know, like it does just happen." So I guess.
Yeah. A lot of people have told me that too. And they tell me to smile more and all that. But I don't know. After I get beat by Cody, I can't smile. I don't know. I try, but it's not in me. So.
Well, I mean, it'll come with time, I guess. I don't know. Maybe you'll get more wins and you just get to smile for free anyway.
Maybe.
Yeah. So what's it like then being on the road in COVID, seeing as if you're driving everywhere because you can't fly? Like,
actually, I'm just driving across the border and then I'm flying because, like, this last one was in Michigan and we've been to Iowa. So those are like 30-hour drives or so. So I'm no longer willing to do that. So I fly to all the races. I just drive 3 hours across the border to Kalispell or Spokane. I'll get on a flight. And so that's new for me. I've always driven to races. So now I'm flying, which is pretty nice. Not sitting in a van for 2 days right before a big race, you know?
Yeah, that's fair, man. Like you don't suffer from atrophy.
Yeah. Sitting for 30 hours is just hard on the body.
Yeah,
sure.
No doubt. So what do you like best, I guess, about being part of the new KTM team?
I would say, you know, flying into the race and my mechanics there with my bike, and like all I really do is just show up and walk the track, and that's like I just eat, ride, and sleep. Like there's nothing else for me to do. I don't have to work on the bike. I don't have to drive. Like it's just, they really make it easy for me to show up and just do my job basically, because everything else is taken care of, I'd say.
Oh, that's got to be amazing. Like, geez, man, that's, yeah, a little bit jealous there. I load my bike, my wife's bike and my kid's bike, and I do all the work on that. So to hand that off to someone else would be awesome.
Yeah, it makes a big difference.
Yeah. So being the Canadian kid, do you get ribbed a bunch about that? Like
down in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Actually, surprisingly, not much, really. I would think, you know, going down there and beating Americans, Americans are pretty patriotic. So you think I would like get ripped into a bit, but I haven't really experienced that yet. It might happen in the future, who knows? But so far, the Americans have pretty much treated me just like one of their own, which is pretty cool. And then I also have all the Canadians backing me too, which is really awesome. Like I get so many messages and so much support from Canada. So that's, it definitely, if I'm having a bad day or something, that makes it a lot easier for me, because not every day is a good day. So when I get the support from the Canadians, that's special to me.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Everybody I know that rides, speaks of you like in such high regard. Like they're so happy that you're making a really good career of it. I mean, everybody also appreciates the hard work and the talent that you have. But it's interesting to see how much everybody's happy for you and for your successes. And they're, yeah, that's nice.
Like, yeah, very nice.
So what are your plans then? Like, are you going to go, I guess Erzberg got canceled for this year. Are you going to do any more international races?
I think the only one I'm going to do this year now is, I don't know for sure yet, but I'm supposed to be doing Red Bull Romaniac. But we shall see. But yeah. I am supposed to do it. So I think that would be, it's going to be gnarly if I do it, because it's, you know, 5 days, like 8 hours a day. So it's It's no joke, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's a lot of hard work. Have you ever done any racing like that?
I've never done 8 hours a day for 5 days. No, that's a lot of riding. It's like 40 hours, basically.
Yeah, man, that's a full job. Like, I know they force you guys to take a meal break and a hydration break or something every couple hours, but.
Yeah, something like, I don't know all the details, but I know you get a 20-minute break or so. And this year, actually, they released you have a tent out in the woods and you're staying out in the mountains this year for one night, which is different, I guess. And you have to work on your own bike. So if you break something, I think it's on day two, you have to spend the night in the woods, and it's basically a tent at this camp they have set up. And so if the bike breaks, or if you can't do a tire change, I don't think. So it's all on you. So like the rider's pretty much got to be a mechanic for that night and morning. So that's going to add another factor to the race.
How confident do you feel you're going to be able to maintain your bike?
I'm not bad at fixing bikes. The last year I may have lost a little bit of bike maintenance, but yeah. I've always worked on all my own bikes. So everything, you know, all the easy stuff I can do. If it's major, like the engine or something like that, and I'm not going to be able to race anyways, then, you know, my race is over. But if it's anything simple, I'll be able to do it.
Oh, that's fair. I mean, that's like most riders, I guess.
Yeah.
And so talking about bike maintenance and racing, you got a gift from Cody 1 year out at Edersburg. When he loaned you the brake caliper and all that stuff?
Yeah, so that was super lucky and so nice of him. I just finished, or maybe I had one more kilometer of Carl's Diner, which, you know, takes like 20 minutes to do 1 kilometer of it.
Yeah.
So it's crazy to think about that, but I was almost done and I lost my front brake and I don't even really know what it was. I think it was something to do with the brake line. May have got a hole in it, so all the fluid leaked out or something. So I had no front brake, and that kilometer was not easy to do with no front brake because I couldn't stop myself in any of the holes or on top of the rocks. So anyways, at this point, you know, I'm pretty much baked too. I can't even think. I can't see. Like, I'm just extremely exhausted. And I get to the end and Cody was there and I talked to him for like 5 seconds. Like, I had no front brake, and he had a torn knee at that point, so he couldn't really walk, and his bike was like 100 meters away, I'd say, and he ended up hobbling over on one leg and taking his whole brake line off and then hobbling back. And I think he changed it or someone else changed it, because I think I was just lying down pretty much like I was so out of it. And then they got it all back together and like, you gotta go. And I got back on, and at that point, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes, and I felt really good, and then I raced to the finish and finished 14th. And if it wasn't for Cody, there's no way I would have finished, because the downhills after that point were, I had to get off my bike and walk even with the front brake, so they were just so steep that there's no way I would have finished with no front brake. So props to Cody for that one. He definitely made my day that day.
That's awesome. It goes to show the camaraderie. Yeah. I mean, you guys might race each other and be competitive against each other, but in the clutch, everybody's sort of one big team.
Yeah, for sure. Off-road's a little different than Supercross, I'd say. We're kind of all friends on and off the track, and me and Cody have been friends since like 2016, I think. I went and stayed at his house, so we've always kind of been friends for a while now. So I think we'll stay that way for the future.
That's nice, man. That's awesome. So speaking of friends, when you come back to Canada, like you live in BC, I guess, hey?
Yeah, Invermere.
Yeah, and Alberta claims you as their own because you're always racing out in Calgary. Yeah, it's kind of weird. How is that for you? Like duality. Like you're like a Canadian dual citizen, part BC, part Alberta.
Yeah, I live basically on the border of BC and Alberta, and I travel to Calgary a lot. So I'm kind of, lots of people think I live in Calgary, but I actually live in BC, but the part of BC I'm in, there's not a lot of riders here unless you go like out to Kamloops, which is 5 hours away from me. So I'm hardly ever out there. So just happens to be the closest riders for me are in Calgary. So that's where I spend a lot of my time, and I liked it there. I could possibly move there because it's got an airport. So if I keep on racing the way I am, it would be kind of ideal to have an airport, a major airport that close to where I live. So if that happens in the future, that'd be cool. But who knows? You know, Calgary's got way worse weather than Invermere. You know, they got winter like 12 months. 12 months year round, I think sometimes, like, they get snow every month. So
yeah,
that's one thing that kind of sucks about Calgary. And you also have to drive pretty far to get to the riding. Where I live, I can ride right from basically my house, and I got like multiple areas within a 15-minute drive. So that's kind of why I'm still sticking around here, because the riding is so good. And yeah, it's got everything except an airport, I say.
Yeah. Oh man, Invermere is really nice. Like, riding out there is a lot of fun. I take the family to, what was it? Windermere, I guess, on West Side Road.
Yeah.
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 And that's pretty sweet, because it's got something for everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
With all the riding you've done in Western Canada, whereabouts your favorite spot, would you say?
That's hard to answer. It kind of depends on the time of year, because in the winter, you can't ride pretty much anywhere in Western Canada except Vancouver. So in the winter, my go-to is like the Vancouver area. They got a lot of good riding there. And then in the summer, it's tough to beat the Alpine riding in Invermere in Calgary. The Alpine's pretty sick. You don't get to do that in many places in the world. So yeah, I get asked that question quite a bit, and I can never really answer it because I like riding different areas.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, there's such a variety, and each of the little areas kind of has its own character. So it's sort of like what you're feeling that day.
Exactly.
Yeah. I like Bear Creek with all the ski hill inspired signage, and then out in Fallen Timber in that area, just cause it's like, it's just expansive and crazy.
Yeah. Fallen Timber is cool. I like it there.
Spencer Wilton. He was my first guest. My first moto guest, and I know he's a friend of yours. How often do you guys get to ride together now that you're a factory rider?
Yeah, so actually I did listen to that podcast. You guys did a good job. It was a pretty good podcast. And yeah, me and Spenny we've been riding together now for a long time, and we're pretty good friends off the track. We're like two top riders in the US, and we just happen to live 3 hours apart in Canada, so it's kind of a no-brainer that me and him get to ride together. So I would say, well, right now because of COVID, it's not a lot, I would say, but
yeah,
we kind of all depends on the travel schedule. But if we're home, there's a good chance we'll be riding together, maybe, you know, for like 4 days a week, and then maybe take a couple weeks off, and then another 4 day period, because one of us will travel either way, and we'll just hang out at each other's house and do our thing. And yeah, he's a good training partner for me because he's kind of the opposite. I'm a little more calmer than him, and he's like super spastic kind of with his riding. He like he's pretty gnarly. Like, he'll do lines that I won't necessarily do because I'm like, that's kind of dangerous, but he'll just send it, which is good for me because then it kind of forces me to do it, because if I don't do it, then I'm like the factory guy that won't do the line Spenny just did. So it's really good for me to ride with him. He pushes me out of my comfort zone, and we keep it fun too. So that's good.
And he was telling me about, I guess you heard in the podcast how he was like giving you a hard time bashing bars and things because he was trying to train you up to fight Colton. Cause I guess Colton's a little bit of a bar basher.
Yeah, he can be dirty, Colton. So Spenny was being a good friend, and he was basically just letting me hit him, and he was hitting me, and yeah, it was pretty fun actually, and it was good practice too. So that was kind of a funny story.
That's awesome. Like, yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's easy for me to sit here and imagine that it would be all business on the training course. And it was nice to hear that you guys like screw around and have fun and like enjoy yourselves. It's not always a job.
Yeah. When I train by myself for like a long period of time, it's just, you get dressed by yourself. You go ride by yourself. There's no one to talk to. It's hard to push yourself. So it's just, that's when the whole riding for a job gets, like, I kind of get over it at that point. But then if I push through that, and then I get to ride with Spenny the next week or someone, say, and I smile and we'll push the limits a bit. And then that's when I'm like, yeah, this is the best job in the world.
Oh, that's fair. Is that where you find like, I don't know, those little incremental growth moments is when you're riding with someone else, challenging someone else versus just trying to go over on your own?
Yeah. When you're on your own, you don't really, you're not going to push yourself to that next limit because I don't really know why, but I don't think many people on their own can push themselves to the next limit. Like, it's hard to do, but when you're with someone else, it just, you just up it that much. And that's, you kind of need that once in a while just to keep making those gains. But also the training by yourself is important for me because you can do like really focused foundational work where you don't have any distractions. So kind of a give and take. I need both in my life. So
yeah, good balance.
That's my deal.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. So can you remember back to like when you were just starting out or when you first turned pro?
Yeah. I mean, which one do you want, pro or just starting out?
We'll start with just starting out.
Yeah, so I started riding motocross at Calgary, actually, when I was like 4 years old or so. And we started racing and we started taking the motocross thing pretty serious. And we were doing the whole CMRC motocross series. And I think I won that on a 50 when I was like six or so. And then we went to Walton and I actually won the motocross championship for all of Canada. And then I immediately broke my femur right after that. So then we pretty much quit dirt biking altogether until I was like maybe 13 or 13-ish, maybe 14. We had dirt bikes, but we never used them because, I don't know, something was breaking my femur. It was a big deal for my whole family because I was in a cast all the way from my shoulders to my feet, like completely, yeah, ruined for like 6 months. I was in a full body suit, a hard cast. So it was,
oh wow.
I think that was kind of tough on my family. So we kind of gave up on the dirt biking thing. And then when I was 14, we got into enduro riding because my dad was always a single track rider. So that was, I guess, the next step for us was just to ride in the bush. And since we live on a little acreage, the back on the crown land, we didn't have to get our parents to drive us somewhere. We could just ride right from the house. So that was just kind of natural for us. And I also had an older brother, his name's Wyatt, who's 2 years older than me. So I was always chasing him, which was really good for me because I never liked him being better than me. But since he was 2 years older and we were like so young, it was just impossible for me to be as good as him because he was so much bigger and stronger. So he could just lift his bike up. I could never lift my bike up. He had to come get me out of situations. So I was like the little bro just trying to keep up. And that definitely paid dividends in the long run because he always kept me hungry to keep going because he's kind of a natural rider, kind of like Benny, I think, where I'm not such a natural rider. I learned slow, I think. So I always had to work hard and my brother could hit a rock line and clean it first try. And I'd have to, you know, ride it for an hour to try to do what he just did. And I'm like, that is so stupid. How can you do that? So that always just kept me hungry. So I'm really fortunate to have a brother like that in our younger years. Yeah.
Do you find that you're too analytical then when you ride versus maybe your brother was like a soul surfer?
He's definitely a soul surfer, but I'm not analytical at all. Like, that's the complete opposite of me. I don't know what it is. I just don't pick up things like super fast.
Okay. Oh, that's all good, man. Like, I don't pick up things quickly either.
So, and one thing that was natural to me was like endurance and kind of fitness. I always just had good fitness where my brother had the skill, but he never really had fitness. So he could go really fast at the start, but I end up always just catching him just by raw fitness, I guess you could say. I never really had to work at cardio. I could always sustain like heart rates for long periods of time naturally. So that was always something that helped me, especially like in 3 hour races when we were growing up in those like air scrambles in Alberta and BC.
Yeah.
It's 3 hours long. You have to be able to go for long periods of time. So that really helped me.
Yeah. Endurance is a key factor in success. Like it doesn't matter how talented you are. If you're winded in the first hour, you're done.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty key.
So you went from MX to enduro and then basically now hard enduro. And this is where this is your happy place, eh?
Yeah, so I'll take you through the next step of my career. So we got into Endurocross at that point. I think it was like 2013 or 14. I think we went to our first Endurocross race, and we thought that was pretty cool. Like, you're in a stadium, there's like 8,000 people or whatever. It was like super exciting. So we started chasing that. We built a track at my parents' house. Me and my brother would ride that all the time, and it was cool. You get to travel down with, we traveled down with 40 and Spenny, like all the way to California and all the states way down there. So it was pretty cool. They just, my parents would send me and Wyatt with them, and we'd drive all the way down there. So that was a cool experience. And then I just kind of super getting into like the whole doing good at racing thing. And I ended up breaking my back when I was like 16, I think, as soon as I started taking it kind of serious. And I ended up spending a week in a hospital and going through a lot of pain. And I ended up coming away from that, I think like 6 months later, I was able to ride, and I was hungrier than I was right before I broke my back. So I ended up taking a big leap after that, and that hunger I had, I don't know why, but I broke my back and I sat in the room for 6 months and I came back hungry. So that helped me. And then we started doing the Endurocross more and more. And then I ended up tearing my rotator cuff. I just fell over going like a mile an hour and I tore my rotator cuff. It was like the silliest crash in the world, and I ended up with a major injury out of it. So with our Canadian healthcare system, you can't really get an MRI right away unless you pay for it. And then you have to wait to get into surgery. So I had a torn rotator cuff for maybe over a year I had it. I was riding with it and I wasn't really doing good at that point. I was getting beat by people I normally wouldn't get beat by. And then I finally got the surgery, and I ended up coming back to dirt biking too soon. And I think I kind of ruined it, because I'm still having problems with it now, but it's certainly better than it was before the surgery. But for anyone out there listening, if you have an ACL or a rotator cuff, I know firsthand, do not come back. Like, wait at least 6 months or something, because I ruined that. Pretty unfortunate about that.
Yeah, that's the thing about major injuries, is like the physio probably even underestimates how long you're supposed to stay off, and everybody cuts the physio short.
Yeah, in football, you know, they got some of the best doctors, and the football guys, they don't come back for over a year. So if that's saying anything, you should probably listen to that it takes a year to heal ligaments and stuff like that.
That's so breaking your back, like, how did your parents take that? I guess, like, did you get one of those sit downs with mom and dad where they're like, is this what you want to do and that kind of stuff?
Oh, they never did that to me. They always just let the choice be up to me. I just wanted to keep going, so that was what we did. And I was actually in a back brace, so I couldn't sit down because it kept my whole back completely straight. So I ended up getting homeschooled and standing up on a counter kind of for school. So that was like a pretty big ordeal, I would say, getting pulled out of school to do all that.
Sounds rough, man. Like,
yeah. So it was tough to sleep, that's for sure.
No doubt. So with that, like a broken back, that has to be like your overall worst injury.
Actually, it wasn't even the worst. I got one. The next stage of my racing career was in 2017. I got my first Endurocross podium, and at that point I was on Team SRT Husqvarna, which was at that point, you know, a good team to be on. So I was doing good, and I was getting podiums in Endurocross that year. So like, my career was really starting to take off at that point. And then in 2018. The first round of Endurocross, I got third. And then in the second, I ended up passing Cody Webb on the last lap, and he crashed. And I got second at that point, which was to beat like Cody and Colton was a pretty big deal. And I was like 20 years old or something. So that was a really big deal. And then the next weekend, round three in Reno, I ended up there was this log ride you had to ride, and I was trying to jump off early to save time instead of riding to the very end of it. And my back tire ended up slipping one way and my front tire went the other way. Oh. And then my bike turned like a skateboard kind of, and then we just ejected off and I ended up landing on my hands, I guess, kind of, but I ended up dislocating my one wrist and breaking my other hand. And I tried to get back on the bike, and as soon as I put my hand on the bars, I'm like, that doesn't feel good. So yeah. I ended up going to the hospital that night. They tried to set it and they couldn't set it. So I ended up getting surgery because basically, I don't know if you know, but like all the carpal bones in your wrist, that, you know, the carpal bones.
Yep. Yeah.
Basically all of those were just scattered. Everything was torn. I broke a couple, I think. So it was not good. And the wrist gets no blood flow. So I ended up getting surgery, I think, the next day. And I was down there by myself, too. I didn't even have a family member. I think a friend down there stayed at the hospital with me. So that was a little scary for me. So I ended up getting surgery by a good wrist surgeon, luckily. And then it was way worse than anyone anticipated. I couldn't even feel parts of my hand for like 3 or 4 months. And there's still parts of my wrist that I still can't even feel. So I have some nerve damage. And I think it was like, you know, 3 months before I could even move my fingers. That's how swollen everything was. It was insane. Like I could barely move my fingers after 3 months, which is not a good sign if you want to be a professional athlete, especially a dirt biker where your wrist gets absolutely pounded. So yeah, anyways, after like 6 months or so, I think I got back on a bike, and it was a good day off, obviously, after 6 months to get back on, but it wasn't feeling good. But you know, I ended up pushing through, and now it's been, I think, 3 years since then, and I'm still, it almost hurts every day I ride, which is a pretty, you know, it's a bummer that it's still bothering me. But
yeah,
you know, it kind of makes me have a different outlook on the whole racing thing, because, you know, one mistake and it can be taken away from you. Like, it's not a joke, because, you know, it's been 3 years and I'm still having problems with this. So you got to take it seriously. You can't just be like screwing around if you're on the bike, and like in the durocross, we're doing massive jumps with massive consequences. So you have to be 100% into it. Like, you can't be like lolly, 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 done.
Yeah.
You can focus when you're on the bike, and that kind of helped me, I think. Like, but yeah, that's pretty much all my injuries up to this point, I think.
That's just
maybe a couple boo boos here and there, but that's pretty much the whole journey.
Hopefully that's the end of a long list. No more to come.
Yeah.
So have you thought about life after racing, or is it like, because I imagine every time you have one of these big injury setbacks, it's got to be on your mind.
Yeah. When you get these big ones, you get like 6 months of sitting in the bedroom doing nothing. So you get a lot of time to think, and it's kind of hard to, when you're like 20 years old, thinking about what you're going to do. But I think I'll definitely do something in business. I'm super interested in money and numbers, and I really like real estate. So I could probably see myself doing something with real estate, I'd say.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Especially banking the 4%. Even Uncle Trudeau can take his cut and you'd still be doing okay, especially if you're selling around here. Like, geez.
Yeah.
It's like, I always wonder, because like talking with Cody, one of the things he said is he's racing because he's trying to avoid having a real job still. And, you know, like even he has sort of the thoughts that on the future, like in the real world, sooner or later, everyone stops. But then you got like Jarvis, who's my age, like at 46, he's still racing, but even he feels like his contracts are getting shorter and shorter. So who knows?
Who is that?
Graham Jarvis.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He's something special. That's for sure. There's no way I see myself going that long. That is very, very impressive of him.
Yeah.
Like, insane that he won Erzberg in 2019, which was 2 years ago, and I think he must have been 44 then. That would be tough to top that. I don't think anyone will beat that age, that's for sure.
No way. Yeah, I guess he's going for a sixth Erzberg. That's his plan, because he's got five and Taddy's got five, so he wants six to beat Taddy.
Yeah, that would be cool. going to be tough, but
who of all the riders in the world, who would you love to go like on just like on a bush ride with?
Probably Jarvis, I would say. He's one of the only guys that I haven't really got to ride with. So I've raced with him, but I've never really just got to go ride and hit some crazy lines, because he'd definitely do some crazy lines. It'd be cool to see what he's capable of doing.
Yeah, that's fair. You should try to get to his school in Spain.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, whatever. Could you imagine he's just looking through the guest list of who's going to come in? Like, oh, Tristan Hart. I'm sure he'd show up for work that day. Like, I'm confident. I bet he farms it all out to just his staff, most of it. Because it's just guys my age probably banging their bars and crashing. Hopeless lot. So where do you like to ride? Like, outside of Canada and stuff? Like, so Rev Limiter, you were at Rev Limiter this year, Last Dog Standing, was it the Grindstone? All these races, which ones were like the most memorable? Because I understand that hard enduro like that is just starting in America. Like, it hasn't been around a lot. So these, they're sort of like figuring it out, I guess, as it goes.
Yeah, it is pretty new in America compared to the Europe, where it's been around for a while. But definitely the Grinding Stone was a cool place. I don't know if you saw videos, but the videos were going viral because of how cool it was, and there was so much carnage because basically you were just going up 50-foot walls of rock, and if you didn't make it, you and the bike were just cartwheeling to the bottom. So that's a cool place, and it's right by a major tourist attraction with the Grand Canyons right there and all that. So that place is cool. I really like the East Coast rounds because they're most similar to Canada. It's like wet dirt and trees. So I like the West Coast rounds too, but the rocks, I like rocks, but for some reason I'm better on wet dirt than riding through rocks. Cody's really good in the rocks, so East Coast rounds kind of favor me, and the West Coast rounds, I think, kind of favor him.
Yeah, I guess he grew up in the West Coast, so that's sort of what he learned to ride on. And here it's kind of, we got rocks and dirt and roots, which nobody likes, but you sort of get an appetite for them, I guess, or an appreciation for them.
Yeah, you get accustomed to it.
Yeah, like what a torture. So Romaniacs, you're planning to go there this year. What's your plan to train for that?
I don't even know. I don't know if anyone rides 8 hours a day for, 5 days straight in practice. I don't know if anyone does that, but I will just try and ride basically as long as I can, like maybe 5-6 hours a day, and try and do it for a couple of days in a row. But you don't want to do it too close to the race, because you don't want to be going to the race super burned out. And then also leading up to that race, I got 3 races in a row in July right before it. So I probably won't even be doing that much riding before Romaniacs anyways, but racing is really good practice. So that'll be my training, I guess, for Romaniacs this year. Will be 3 races.
Well, if I could offer anybody to speak to about it, it would be Howard Lawrence.
Is he going back this year?
I think he's planning to go back. I don't know if he's going back this year or next year, but he definitely wants to go back. He had such a good time that he's not written it off. So
yeah, I think a lot of people like that race. It's a good bang for your buck too. Erzberg, you pay 10 grand and you get to ride for possibly only 10 minutes if you don't qualify into the top 500. Where Romaniac, you automatically qualify and you get like 40 hours of riding. So, and you also get to go through like all the mountains and all that. So that's, I think it's a good bang for your buck, and it's a cool experience. Where Erzberg is a cool experience too, but it's more catered to the pros because there's only like 14 guys to finish every year. So it's kind of a different scenario, I'd say.
Yeah, you go to Erzberg just to see how far you get to go before you fail.
Yeah, Erzberg it's pretty cool though with how many people are there. Like, it's crazy. I think there's like 40,000. I don't know. There's so many people there. The whole mountain is just covered with tents and campers, and everyone is so everyone's so happy to be there, and it's just a really cool, really cool venue and a cool experience, I'd say.
Yeah, one of the things you're mentioning with the arena cross or enduro cross was that there's like 8,000 people in these stadiums. And growing up Western Canada, you know that like our packed races, it's just like a couple hundred people in the stands. Like how was the culture shock for you going from basically our little deal to something like that?
Yeah, it's definitely for your first one, it's an eye opener because you roll out onto the gate as an amateur and you just see all these people. So it's like, it's a pretty big shock, but it never really affected me that much. When I'm racing, I don't really even know there's people in the building sometimes, unless it's like the last lap and everyone's cheering. But for the most part, if there is any pressure, I feel like I do better with the pressure. So if anything, the more people, the better for me.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, you're a crowd favorite, so it's not going to be like 8,000 people booing you on your lap, trying to demoralize you.
Actually, I got a funny story about that.
Okay.
So my first podium was in Las Vegas 2017 in Enduro Cross, and I think me, Colton won, Cody got second, and then me third. And Colton that night, he had a couple of dirty passes on Cody. So the fans were, they loved Cody, and they didn't really like Colton. So anyways, they called up Colton to interview him, but I ended up going up. So all they heard was Colton Hager because they couldn't really see down to the podium. And then as soon as I walked up, 19, 20 years old, my first podium, like I'm the most stoked I've ever been. And then I just get booed for 3 minutes straight. And then she's trying to interview me and they're booing. I can't even talk. And I think I almost started crying because I'm like, what is this, what it's like? And then I didn't even realize till after that it wasn't for me. And I think Colton came up and said something. He's like, yeah, that was meant for me. That's a pretty funny story.
That is awesome. That's pure gold, man. Like, yeah. Welcome to America, Canada. Boo.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So you're a young guy. Are you in a relationship with anybody?
Yeah, actually, my girlfriend, I'm 24. We've been together since we were 16. I think we've been together for 8 years now.
Oh, wow.
She's actually... she's in medical school right now. She just finished her first year, so she got 3 more years and she'll be a doctor. So we kind of are doing the same thing. She's being a doctor, which some would say is gnarlier than being an athlete. So at some points in our lives, we don't really have time for each other because we're both trying to achieve something that's not easy. So it kind of works out that we both don't have time for each other. So not one of us is sadder. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
So it works out really good. So yeah, we've been together for 8 years and I see a lot more in the future.
That's so awesome. Like it's good that you found someone who can kind of understand what dedication for career means, like the sacrifice that could come with that. And yeah.
Yeah.
That's
She's also a doctor and I'm a dirt biker. So
I was going to say that.
So she can look after me when I'm not, doing that good after a crash or something. Yeah. And also, she's super smart too. So medical school for her seems not that hard because she does medical school and then she'll also do all like 5 things a day for me too. So she's definitely really good to have on my side because she helps me do so much in my life. So it'd be hard to do what I do without her for sure.
That's awesome. She sounds like a great person.
Wow. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Of all the bikes you've had, I know that as a factory guy, you're going to have to say KTM, but like which one, did you gel with the most?
For brand?
No, just whatever. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter brand or whatever. Like everybody has like one motorcycle that they just it gelled with them. Like you guys were made for each other kind of thing. The one you're sad to see go.
So I've pretty much been on KTMs my whole life. So I've only been on KTM. I was on Husqvarnas for 2 years, but kind of the same bike. So yeah, I've been bleeding orange for like 20 something years. So I would say my favorite bike is the KTM 300, and especially when it came out with the fuel injection, the TPI.
Yeah,
that was like love at first sight, because in Canada, when we, you know, start at 3,000 feet elevation and then we go up to like 7,000 feet elevation and the carb starts running like crap.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I was never a big like jetting guy on the trail. I didn't like doing that. So when the TPI came out and it would self adjust as you go up, like I was just in love instantly. So that was definitely, that's my favorite bike to ride every day too.
Nice. Oh, that's sweet. Like I could see how fuel injection would make life easy, especially like maybe not Gen 1, but once they work out the bugs and the mapping and all that.
Yeah, Gen 1 was not the smoothest, I'd say, but the 2020 was the first year that I like instantly knew like this is the best bike. And yeah, that was last year. So
yeah,
2020 last year, I was in love with it for sure.
Oh, have you thought about like a dealership or anything like that?
Yeah, I've definitely thought about it. I'd like to do it here in Invermere, because we've never really had full dealerships to sell dirt bikes, but we've had lots of shops and they've pretty much always died because I think they've had management problems.
Okay.
And we're kind of small to have a full dealership, only 3,000 population. But in the summer, half of Calgary, I think, moves out here and we turn into like 50,000 or something. So in the summer, there's definitely enough people to do it, but it'd be
seasonal.
You'd have to crack the code.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd have to crack the code of the management issue and all that. And I don't know if you'd ever make a lot of money out here like you would in the city possibly. And when you may have one in the city, you also have problems too. So
yeah,
I don't know. It would be kind of cool to, I don't know if my name would ever be big enough to, you know, have a hard dealership, but if it did, that would be pretty cool.
Well, your name's pretty big, man. Like, it could be just cause of where I live and, you know, you have such an impact on the area. So your name is everywhere and whatever, but, you're like one of the top riders in the world, dude. Like your name's pretty big.
Should I do it then?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to make your financial decisions. You just lend. You know what you should do is just, franchise your name. Like let somebody have the Hart dealership and then you just collect a royalty every time they make a sale or something like that.
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad.
Yeah, passive income. That's the future. So, okay.
Yep.
All right. Oh, here, what else do you do? Like, other than dirt biking, do you have any other passions at all?
Probably my biggest passion outside of dirt biking would be business. Like, I wake up every day and I read the news, business news or real estate news, and I'm pretty interested in stocks too, passive income stuff. That kind of stuff gets me going. So that's kind of what I do every morning, is trying to learn something about the business world. So that's kind of a hobby for me, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that's fair.
But then like, I also am a big mountain bike guy, because we got really sweet mountain biking here in Invermere. And me and my girlfriend, we do a lot of hikes, and we just recently started camping every night before one of my, like before every race, we'll camp the night before I leave. That was kind of a goodbye, which has kind of been cool. And last year we did a pretty crazy hike to the middle of nowhere, and we brought a tent, we stayed there, and there was a massive windstorm and it was pretty much collapsing the tent in half, and I thought we were literally going to die. So that was an adventure for sure. We're in for adventures.
Where is your favorite place to camp? I guess you guys do it always local in Invermere then?
We try to go a new place every time. Just try and find some back road that maybe leads to a lake or something. But yeah, we've been going to a new place every time, just trying to explore new stuff.
I don't want to heat out some spot if you go to it. You have all the freaking weirdos like showing up. Looking for discount codes at Hart KTM.
Yeah.
So you've had a lot of like sponsorship and everything. So for young guys and girls starting out, what advice could you give to them to attract sponsors?
Biggest thing is definitely building the relationship. And I'm not a big talker. So for me, my dad actually was pretty much the key to my early sponsorships, because as a 15-year-old, I was even more shy than I am now. So he would always be the guy talking to. I started with CycleWorks, and then I ended up going to A&E Racing, which got sold. But Dave French was the original owner, and he was really good to me and my brother. He was giving us free bikes, and that kind of got us started, because that's a huge cost off my parents that we could then use that to go towards racing, the travel. So yeah, the building a relationship is definitely key. You know, social media is getting bigger now, which I'm not a super big fan of, the whole social media. People, you know, post stuff and they get money for it. I'm not super big in on that, but it's becoming more and more important. So between social media and building relationships, those are the two things to do, I think.
Yeah, I guess social media lets you build your relationship with the people who support you, is the only way I can see it or justify it. Like, it seems to be a big component. I know where my wife works. They offer, like, it's like a hotel, and like they were offering stays to influencers to try and get sort of, I don't know, organic advertising. And and there was like a minimum threshold of 10,000 followers. And then they've had to up it because essentially you could buy 10,000 followers. So once they realized they were sort of a scam, they wanted real influencers and not fake ones. But yeah, I do see where the corporate world sees social media as a new medium for advertising. So
yeah, it's going that way.
What is the thing you appreciate the most, like from the fans when they reach out and talk to you?
One thing that really impacts me a lot is when I'm not fully believing in myself, and I don't know if I'm going to beat Cody that weekend or not, because maybe something happened in practice or one of the races. And anyways, the Canadians, they pretty much always think I'm going to win every weekend. So I'm like, man, if they believe I'm going to win, I should believe. So it's pretty cool that, you know, they kind of expect me to win every weekend. Sometimes it doesn't work that well, because I feel like pressure, like they just expect me to win, and it's not that easy. But most of the time I just think of it as, man, if they believe I should win, then I should believe it too. And actually, I think this last weekend, it was actually Mike Roberts, I'll shout him out, and he said I was going to win, and I wasn't too sure on my flight, so I was kind of contemplating what was going on, and he said that, and something clicked, and I'm like, you know what, I'm going to win this weekend, and then I won. And also, three races ago, I was walking the track, and the guy came up to me, he's like, I think you're going to win today, and I'm like, oh, geez, thanks, and I ended up winning that one too, so I think that's pretty cool. I think it's definitely super cool to have the Canadians. Like, I seriously wouldn't want to do it without having all their support. So I appreciate them so much.
That's awesome. Do you think that, like, visualizing the win, or like acknowledging the win, helps to make it happen?
Yeah, it's definitely pretty key. I think the higher up you go as an athlete, the more important the mental part is. Whereas, like, as a younger athlete, it's more about the skill kind of, but then as you get older, your body starts deteriorating, and you have to also use your mind, not just your body. So the mental is definitely really important.
How do you train the mental? Just your experience, I guess?
Yeah, for me, that's pretty much it. It's hard. It's definitely hard to train mental. It's like, just pounding into the wall.
So you're saying about how the fella come up and told you were going to win, and in your mind, your focus is like, am I going to beat Cody this weekend? Is that like your main thought every weekend? Like, am I going to beat Cody?
That's definitely, you know, sometimes the main thought, but I've been trying not to tell myself that. I've been just trying to, you know, ride my own race and not worry about where Cody is, where he's going to be, or what he's going to do, because he can do things that no one else can do. So I shouldn't worry about what he's going to do. You know, he can do lines that no one in the world can do, not even Jarvis sometimes. So I can't get too caught up in trying to do what Cody's going to do or worry about it, because me and him, we race completely different. And then at the end of the day, we end up being really close. So it's kind of cool that two completely different styles end up at the finish line almost at the same time every race. So that's kind of cool.
That is kind of cool. There's more than one path on the course that's just as effective. Yep. Yeah. Like, that's sweet. There's no, I guess, in a way, there's no right way. There's just the way. Like, however you manage to get way through. I'm, yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out my way.
Yeah, there you go. All right, man. I feel I've used up a lot of your time. So is there anybody you want to give a shout out to at the end?
Yeah, I'd like to thank, you know, Red Bull, FMF, and KTM. But I definitely, my biggest thanks goes to all my Canadian supporters. I couldn't and I wouldn't want to do it without you guys. So hopefully you guys can keep it coming, and hopefully I can bring my big goal is to bring an Erzberg win to Canada. That's something I want to accomplish, and I think we can make it happen. So that's what I'm shooting for.
Oh, that would be so awesome, man. Like the biggest, hardest races, the biggest, hardest race in the year.
No Canadian's been on the podium yet, and I kind of want to skip the whole podium and go straight to the win, but we'll see. I'm going to work on that for the next, however long it takes, but that's what I'm going to do.
Well, that brings us to the end of another episode. I want to thank my guests for taking the time to sit down and chat with me. A special thank you to you, my supporters. Without you, this would not be possible. If you enjoyed the show, give it a 5-star rating. And if you haven't already, be sure to like, subscribe, and share. If this is your first time listening, I encourage you to take the 3-episode challenge. Once again, thank you for your continued support, and stay tuned to find out what's coming up next time.